Thank you for listening to the Damage Report podcast, the show covering the true threats facing our country and what you can actually do about them. You can support this free podcast by leaving us a review and giving us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you happen to be listening to it. Every review helps more people discover the show at no cost to you. Welcome back, everyone, to the Damage Report. We are fresh off of an election. And when I say fresh, I don't mean we're not fresh because we were up super late. So we both probably smell at this point, but we just had an election. Our coverage ended 8 minutes ago. No, but we're back. Myself in studio, Johnny DeRola, Jared Jackson joining me. It is a Wednesday after all.
It's JR Wednesday. It's JR Wednesday. The same level of energy for this particular JR Wednesday. But it's a JR Wednesday.
I was just say, if you so welcome to the show. I don't know if you were watching the election coverage last night. So JR is like this right now. He came in at the end. He was yelling and calling himself Maxwell House and Dunkin' Donuts on the coffee bean and the tea leaf,
did I add Maxwell House? That was
you said
good.
Were yelling, and full, now you're like like a guy who ate too many cupcakes and then like.
I've never understood the whole coffee thing. I had a coffee this morning, and it wasn't to wake myself up because it never does it anyway. Mm-hmm.
That's crazy. It is both. It is my savior and my curse. It is the only thing making me awake right now.
I could drink a Rockstar, a Nas energy drink, and a coffee before bed and pass right the F out.
Let's make a video. Let's test that. Because I drink Monsters. Anyway, we've got a lot of stuff that's going to happen today. You're going to be shocked to find out that we're going to be recapping the election today. And we're going to be doing that here in studio. We're also going to be joined in the next block. Rebel HQ's Emma Vigeland is going to join us. Going to break down a number of the races that she's been reporting on all year. Later on in the show, we have a first-time guest from The Nation. Zoe Carpenter is going to be joining us. We're going to talk about some of the ballot initiatives and some of the flippable races that she had been tracking for The Nation. We're going to do an analysis of that. And along the way, we've got a lot to talk about. But right now, I just want to focus on positivity. Good vibes, baby, here in the studio. There were some losses. We will talk about those. But right now, in this first block, what did we win last night? JR and I are going to break it down. And despite the fact that I am still in, you know, a deep depression, there were a lot of good wins yesterday. And I will say overall, was yesterday a blue wave? You know, we've been saying for months, stop assuming it's going to happen. Now, it didn't happen the way I hoped it would happen. And when I say hope, I specifically mean hope, not thought. I hoped that the polls would be off and we'd do much better. Mm-hmm. That didn't happen. But the initial depression that we felt yesterday, like, oh my God, things are falling apart. In the end, that didn't really happen either. In the end, the analysis of what would happen largely came true.
This is still America, you guys. I mean, I said it a little bit last night, but like, well, okay. So again, the only reason,
good thoughts.
One of a couple reasons I wasn't over with the blue wave talk, as you said, we mentioned so many times. Is first off, it builds complacency. We knew that the lines are gonna be long at the polling places. We knew there'd be voter suppression. Mm-hmm. We knew there'd be people getting turned away and kicked out and yelled at. There's some things that happened in the news that I just looked at this morning. We knew all that stuff was gonna be voter intimidation, disenfranchisement, all that was gonna happen. So with all those hurdles that are already in place, why set up another?
I agree.
Saying, hey, there comes a blue wave. When you get to the election site, you're gonna get a helicopter attached to your head. You're gonna propel over the top. You can get to go and vote any way you want to. It was all this senseless stuff. Nancy Pelosi said, it's already over. Month ahead of the election.
This is not as positive as I was hoping. So we're gonna come back to this.
Last thing.
Okay.
Because this also inspires so many people who don't vote with actually in their best interest. They go, oh, you know what I don't want to see? I don't want to see them brag about this blue wave that they've been bragging about. So that became a voting block. It was like, hey, let's vote against a blue wave and actually against ourselves as well.
Yeah, and in a race where there was more than enough other blocks. So,
and by the way, when you pick up the House, which we're going to get to details of, when you pick up the House as a Democratic Party, It's kind of getting washed over because, like, well, it wasn't a blue wave. So, therefore, you getting the House is like nothing.
Although, and again, I do think, like, if you look at the popular vote margin between Democrats and Republicans, it was in the range of and higher than a number of other recent elections over the past two decades that have been called waves. Like, they did actually beat, you know, in the popular vote. They're going to have ended up getting like 33 to 35 House seats. That's pretty big. And one of the reasons that it wasn't bigger is that the Republican advantage in the House going into this midterm election was not gigantic. They didn't have a 60-seat lead. That means there weren't that many easy to flip districts. They had a fairly narrow margin. And even then, 33 or so seats will end up flipping. And again, and I just want to send this message out of this is positivity for the viewers and to Donald Trump. You are floating off into the outer orbit of the gas giants in our system. I want to pull you back to reality. You lost control of the House at a time of record low unemployment and record high voter suppression. You had everything working in your favor except for you. You are the factor. Any other random Republican president, if this was Mike Pence or if this was even Ted Cruz, they would have done much better in these midterm elections based on the fundamentals and the gerrymandering and voter suppression that you guys have set up in states across the country. You were the X factor, Donald Trump, and you blew it. In race after race where he endorsed the Republican, they ended up going down. He will point to a few that he won, including like Ron DeSantis, who squeaked out a narrow victory. Yeah. That's one of the negatives. But he also endorsed a ton of people who have gone down. Now, in terms of the victories, the good stuff, lots of different areas we can go to. I want to start with the ones that I'm most interested in. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has become the youngest woman ever elected to the House in a year where another 29-year-old woman was elected to the House, but she beat her out. She was born earlier. Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib are the first Muslim women elected to the House. Sharice Davids, a lesbian lawyer and former mixed martial arts fighter, defeated a Republican incumbent in Kansas and will join Deborah Holland of New Mexico, another winning Democrat on Tuesday, as the first Native American woman elected to Congress. Unfortunately, Richard Ojeda didn't win. It would have been awesome for Richard Ojeda, Sharice Davids to be the first intergender tag team in Congress, but unfortunately that's not going to happen.
So what John was just saying is the future is woman.
Maybe I don't even want to give that simple. We'll do a segment on that and how I think that men willfully pretend they don't understand what it means. So we also had Jared Polis in Colorado, the first openly gay governor. Three new black lieutenant governors, four black attorneys general. And if we could bring up this next chart, history of women in the US and Congress, this is interesting for two reasons. So you see the blue line is the women in the Senate getting to about 20 recently. The black line is women in the House. And you can see that it is shooting up over the past couple of decades. But here's the shocking thing. Even with that shooting up, it's less than 100. I guess I'm still naive.
I mean, the number of women
in
the Senate?
House. No, in the Senate it's about 20%.
Right.
In the House it's like 25% maybe. I'm not great at math. Even after all this time, another year of the woman, it's like 1 in 4. And that's partially because you don't have two parties that are trying to elect women. You had tons of new women running, like 80% of them ran as Democrats. The Republicans did basically diddly squat. Mm-hmm. And so even after this amazing influx of awesome new female candidates and winners, it's like 1 in 4.
In the Senate, but you're looking at the House.
I'm talking about the House, it's low.
Am I looking at the wrong chart? Isn't that up to 80% almost? At the
no,
end of-
80. Not 80%
of them.
Yes.
Oh.
No. They are not 80% of the House.
That's crazy. I think that
would be the presentist female.
No way. There's 80% women in the House. I think your chart is off, bro.
But still, you know, huge wins, and so that certainly should be acknowledged. We're not going to be able to point out all. I mean, and then if you go to the individual states, like Ayanna Pressley in Massachusetts, Connecticut got its first African American congresswoman. Like, there's a lot of examples like that. We can't go through all of them, but there were many, and those are great. And almost uniformly Democrats.
That's cool. And exactly. I like the good news, John. I just don't have much to add to
you. Want some other good news? You want some other good news?
Sure.
So in terms of the Senate, now that's the bad area. That's the worst area. But as of this morning, at least, John Tester is back up in Montana. It looks like he is going to win his third Senate race each time at 49% of the vote.
Ugh.
That guy is walking a tightrope in Montana every single time, and it looks like he will have pulled it out. Now, if we could bring up this next chart, you're going to see that while the House is the big story and the Senate is the big disappointment, in terms of governor's races, those blue slashed line states, those are flips from Republican governor control to Democrat, and you're seeing it looks like at least 7. It's possible it could go to 8. I don't think they've called Connecticut there, although the Democrat Ned Lamont, after being down all night, is now up. So you could see 7, 8, possibly 9 races flip across the entirety of the country. The majority of Americans will wake up in the very near future with a Democratic governor, which has not been the case for some time. And so that's not getting talked about a lot, but those positions are hugely important for all sorts of things, you know, expanding Medicaid and things like that, all sorts of things, and it's all over the country.
Yeah, so I mean, we focused a lot on the Beto and Ted Cruz race, and as far as governorships, the Florida race with Andrew Gillum and Ron DeSantis, right? And then those are the disappointments, which was again part of the tone of, oh man, what a disaster. But look, Kansas flipped. Remember Sam Brownback destroyed the economy in Kansas with the same Republican approach to tax cuts, giving to the richest and also the corporations and taking from everyone else and saying, hey, it's gonna trickle down, everything's gonna be wonderful. That didn't work. And then also Kris Kobach, who was known for being one of the biggest lackeys for Trump since he's been in office as Secretary of State, didn't try to jump in the governor race. He lost.
Yes.
It continues
which
that legacy.
Awesome.
Exactly. And he's talking about voter suppression and disenfranchisement of particular voters. We know that our boy Kemp out in Georgia was doing the same thing, right? So this guy, this one lost. Like, again,
thank God.
You got me on the positive trail. We have to remember, this is the infamous picture, that first one, where Kobach is standing with his plan on how to screw people over because he's an American representative of people. Whatever. So there's the positivity in this guy with his, I don't want to start talking about
that
his,
picture. Okay.
About his face. But
it's not about his face, but
I'm just saying there's the look on his face because you know of who he is. So people saw through it and saw through the whole facade of, hey, I'm a Republican, is gonna come and do the best thing for you in this country. When you give us what you're gonna do, and we've seen that not work.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for the memory of that to stick. Because it's always been the case.
Yeah.
But we keep forgetting.
Yeah, look, he lost. Scott Walker lost in Wisconsin. Yep. It looks like Dana Rohrabacher is going down in California. That is huge. Steve King, who won, it was very close. Like he won by about 20% the margin he normally does. So that is good. In the background of all of this, organizations like the Justice Democrats and Our Revolution and others, this was their first time out. Okay, they're gonna learn and grow over time. And some of these races where we didn't end up winning, including Richard Ojeda, were much, much tighter than they were in the past. And hopefully that is something that will continue, especially because there were a number of ballot initiatives, which we'll return to later.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called Un the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of Un the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
you must unlearn what you have learned.
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
The show that set up independent redistricting commissions in a number of states, which means that gerrymandering will be mitigated at least to some extent in the near future. Hopefully that will spread as well. So more good news a little bit later on. We're gonna take a break. When we come back, Emma Vigeland will be joining us.
With so more good news.
We'll see. Welcome back to The Damage Report, everybody. Our post-election wrap-up and a little bit of self-therapy, I guess. So J.R. Jackson's in the studio.
I'm in a good place.
Yeah, he's in a good place. I'm doing okay as the caffeine starts to kick in. But let's add a little bit more to the mix. Rebel HQ's Emma Vigeland joins us now to break down these elections. Emma, welcome to the show.
Thanks, John. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you here. Good to hear your voice. So look, we're very excited to find out your perception of what happened in the election. Now, our viewers should understand that you were violently ill during it. I was metaphorically ill, thanks to some of the results. You had a more visceral reaction. So I want to start off. I saw on Twitter that you were doing your sort of postmortem, and you said that Gillum's loss in Florida was the worst loss of the night. Why is that?
Yeah, besides like the interior of my stomach, which experienced a significant loss as I went through flu season. Gillum's loss was the hardest for me to stomach. Because I think that Florida, we have to do away with the fiction that it is a purple toss-up state at this point. It is completely trending red. I saw this when I went to Trump rallies, and you can really now see it in the election results. They didn't just elect a moderate Republican like the Northeast so enjoys doing. They elected someone who completely aligned himself with Trump and made it very clear from day one that he is a down-the-line racist who's going to call someone a monkey, basically your opponent, on the first day that you're opposing that individual. So that was incredibly disheartening. And now DeSantis is going to redistrict Florida in a way that it may be impossible for Democrats to get any ground there going forward, including in the presidential election.
So it looks like Florida could use one of those ballot measures that sets up an independent redistricting commission, it sounds like. So I want to ask you, in terms of the results, so Gillum ended up losing very close, and it looks like there could possibly be a recount, but he did lose, it looks like, after the polls had him up by a few points. Obviously, this was one of the races that had the most clear, persistent racist campaigning, other than maybe Duncan Hunter's race in California's 50th district. How important do you think in the final result was that sort of racist messaging from DeSantis and Donald Trump?
Very important. I think we're seeing it all over. There was a polling shift, unfortunately, once the caravan messaging started getting more frequent and was being persistently pushed out by the Republicans. As we've said here at TYT, Republicans run to their base and they appeal to them, and the Democrats run from their base. And the Republicans appeal to their base in the worst, most cynical possible way with this caravan messaging. I think Eric Beiler, who covered the Ojeda race in my stead, since I was not feeling well, he pointed out that once the caravan messaging started, the polls really got away from Ojeda in his race against Carol Miller as well. Yeah. So I think we saw that in many places, not just in Florida.
So I did notice you said that there could be a potential silver lining with DeSantis, and that has to do with the environment. So what is that about?
I wouldn't even say it's a silver lining, but when I did speak to Trump supporters, I was surprised in Florida about how many of them mentioned the environment as their top concern, even Republicans at Trump rallies. And in speaking to my camera person who is from Florida, he said, you know, that's a top concern here because a lot of people work, their work involves the water, their work involves tourism, and the red tide is causing significant problems. We're having issues because of hurricane damage, et cetera. And when I spoke to Trump supporters, they didn't buy climate change, but they really bought into DeSantis's plan to help what was going on with the environment down there. And I think that a lot of Trump supporters or Republicans in Florida were angry at Rick Scott's treatment of what was going on down there in the environment. And DeSantis made it a central campaign theme, whereas I didn't really hear Gillum talk too much about climate change, I would say. But again, this is me covering a variety of races, so I can't say specifically.
Emma, it's JR. So you saw a lot of the voters and the types of folks that are down there, and they're as you just pointed out, their level of importance that they place on the climate, the water, and everything, and environment. So between the fact that they voted for an open racist and the fact that they want something done with the environment, which one of those two things did you see them as more important? They hold tighter to a racist, or they hold tighter to like the clean water? So, you know, once you got this guy in office, if he does the clean water thing, but then he's still a huge racist, or maybe he's a huge racist, but then he doesn't do the environment thing, will they still hold on to, because at least one of the two, the racism is still there?
Oh, I mean, I think the racist thing is the most clear motivator for Trump supporters. I think that's becoming clear. I know a lot of progressive pundits, I would include myself in this, talked a lot more about the economic anxiety in the 2016 election. But I think it's becoming clear that the most entrenched Trump supporters are really hanging to the race element. And that's something that we have to grapple with as a nation. I think more that was just a plus for people trying to vote for DeSantis, and maybe some people around the edge really liked what he had to say, and that had to do with the economic anxiety that they're feeling in Florida, less about the climate change issue, but more about the, you know, tourism, their livelihood, et cetera. It's definitely race more than anything when it comes to Republicans in Florida.
So this is a topic we're going to come back to in multiple shows, I assume, especially as we're doing sort of a wrap up of this year over the course of the next month or so. But you have been following a lot of these races for a good deal of time. Like in the case of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, you were with her many times. So you've witnessed a lot of these candidacies. Some have ended up winning, some have ended up losing. Last night, we saw great wins in some cases and sort of devastating losses in others. So as someone who's been following a lot of these races and going to the Trump rallies, how much do you think has changed? Like if you were a leftist and you're trying to get an idea of how we should interpret these midterm elections, how much progress have we actually made from 2016 in terms of running the right sorts of candidates, setting the terms of these campaigns and things like that?
Yeah, I mean, the progress has been slow. I think that most progress is slow. Yeah. It's surprising me how slow the change is happening in the face of someone like Donald Trump. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is, and Ayanna Pressley as well, are two candidates who primaried Democrats themselves, and they are specific cases in that instance. So I don't think we can really glean how this is going to work in the entire country. I mean, we saw James Thompson lost, obviously, in Kansas, and Amar Coppa-Najjar looks to have lost as well to Duncan Hunter, who's under investigation. So I, you know, almost every Justice Democrat lost in a contested race yesterday. So that's something we have to grapple with, even though I still think the trend of being more populist, more progressive is the way to go. We also have to remember that these candidates who aren't running on corporate PAC money, with the exception of someone like Beto O'Rourke, they're at an inherent fundraising disadvantage every time. And that's going to take a while to catch on.
Yeah. Yeah. And we should acknowledge that a lot of those Justice Democrats were running in difficult districts, including that the 50th. You know, Duncan Hunter is under indictment, but it's also an incredibly red district, of course.
Right.
Well, Emma, thank you for joining us. Hope you'll feel better in the near future. And we'll have you back on a little bit later on this year. And give an idea of, you know, where we go from here, perhaps.
Oh, thanks, John and JR.
To see you later. okay, we're gonna take a short break. When we come back, the Dems now have the House, but what should they do with it after this? Welcome back to the Damage Report, everybody. John Adirola, JR Jackson. So, JR, the Dems now have the House. That's the big takeaway. But what are they actually gonna do about it? What are they gonna do with it? Uh-huh. So, what do we think the Dems need to do, both in general to benefit the country, but also politically to advantage themselves and the party going into 2020? For all of these things, pragmatically and politically, ideologically, what do they need to do?
Okay, number one, well, I guess an overarching, I guess, approach is don't be naive. Trump started today, or maybe even last night, who knows, tweeting about how much Nancy Pelosi has earned and deserves to be speaker. Right? Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. Yeah. Let's ignore that. Let's not listen to this guy right now, because we know who he really is. So whatever he's doing, he's trying to pull some kind of division thing or say, hey, butter up Nancy and be like, hey, make sure you keep your people away from me, all right? Because we know how much I'm worried about potentially investigations. Because the media immediately today went to asking him in his impromptu press conference after he was speaking about the results last night. But what about investigations? He lost his mind. Mm-hmm. He started fighting with everyone, telling people to sit down, don't talk to me, all this stuff. It was very fiery. I was enjoying it thoroughly. So that's going to be the focus everyone's on. We already see where it is.
You're saying
investigation, tax reports, all that stuff, tax returns. When the Dems are going to start these investigations into? What about Mueller? What about Russia? All that stuff. I say still do that stuff. But again, don't be naive. Come in and still keeping, I guess we had all this voter turnout and energy from many progressives and Democrats. Put in and continue to put forward a progressive agenda. Number one, you're a legislator. Mm-hmm. Start there. Mm-hmm. Yes, I want all these investigations, but let's start day one.
So they should do them, but you don't rank that highly.
Do it at the same time. Mm-hmm. Don't do it as the biggest thing you're doing, because then they'll continue to be able to paint the picture that you're just there to obstruct and push in, because we still have a large percentage of the country who thinks, mm-hmm. or listens to everything Trump says and goes, all they're trying to do is stop me and stop our momentum. They hate America. They want Kenya to do better. Mm-hmm. So just come in with legislation so that you can also keep your base energized.
Let me respond.
People who want something really done, do real things. and let him shoot all those down. So he's the guy who's stopping progress. Yeah.
So I want to move on to the sort of legislation they can pass. But two things you said. First of all, on Nancy Pelosi, I saw Ken Klippenstein, who's been on the show many times. He tweeted the Donald Trump tweet saying Nancy Pelosi should be the speaker, and then the picture of Admiral Akbar saying it's a trap. So I think we both agree that it would be great if someone else was speaker. I don't even understand at this point why the presumption would have to be that it's her. Other, you know, I understand the conventional wisdom, the fundraising, all that stuff. I'm saying
two words.
I don't understand why, as a party, that seems like a good idea. Republicans love to run against her. She has had her chance. There's literally hundreds of other people who could do the job. So that's a bit frustrating.
That's actually the reason he said it, because he needs another. He needs Hillary Clinton light. Yeah. And he's got three of them. He had Hillary Clinton, he had Nancy Pelosi, and he had Debbie Wasserman Schultz. So three women that, that of course, every Republican voter hates. Mm-hmm. And then there's Debbie. And then also, many Democratic voters don't like. So he's like, this is great.
Or frustrated or fresh
blood. All he's thinking
about
is the next election. We know he doesn't like to represent, he's not a legislator, or actually pass laws or help Americans. He's there to win and to win the next one. Every time someone speaks up, he goes, I'd love to run against them. Mm-hmm. Because all he's thinking about is running. He has no interest in being the actual president.
Yeah, and on so the big thing that they've been talking about is the investigations, whether that's, you know, protecting or supplementing the Mueller investigation or the tax returns or these other things. And I agree, they should do all of those things. But I doubt that's what we're going to. What?
Loudly, like go on the shows and talk about it. When someone asks you, hey, how about that investigation launching? Yes, we are launching the investigation because we have a criminal president. But you know what else we're doing? Go talk about
stuff. Exactly. Like, people have a hard time understanding that you can want something to happen without thinking the reason it needs to happen is because it's going to motivate people to vote in the next election. They need to do it because they need to hold the president accountable if he's breaking the law and things like that. And in terms of like the Mueller stuff, I was a bit frustrated like a week ago. I think it was Glenn Greenwald, with all due respect, was tweeting, if the Russia investigation is so important, why aren't the Dems talking about it in the run up to the election? First of all, you've been telling them for 2 years not to talk about it at all. So you should be happy, celebrating.
Exactly.
And second of all, because they wanted to run on the issue, something that people say they don't do, but Nancy Pelosi wouldn't stop talking about healthcare for all of her other problems. In terms of the media talking about it, because here's the crazy thing, and I know people don't want to accept this. We talk about developments in those investigations when there are developments in those investigations. We don't just wake up and say, okay, let's find something about them to talk about. If things are happening, we talk about it. If things aren't happening, we don't talk about it. Some people don't run their media outlets like that, but that is how we function at the very least. So those things should go on, but that should not be the focus. In terms of legislation, I would like to say, we had a conversation on the Young Turks that I didn't get to weigh in on what they should try to pass. Right. They should pass all sorts of things, but understand that in the background of that, none of it will become law. So just understand that.
Right.
That doesn't mean they shouldn't do it or that they shouldn't do it in a certain way. But I also think that there will be a little bit of, even if they pass the most progressive bill ever, some people sitting on the sidelines will be like, well, they only did it because they know it won't become law. So just expect that if we get to that glorious day, some people will say that.
Do it anyway.
What should they pass?
Okay, so I mean, I don't know the degree.
Got the majority.
I don't know the degree to which they can do things about the healthcare law, because there's so many caveats and things that get cut down and in. But you have to continue to push with the healthcare law, because that's something that has begun to be seen as at least a Democratic tool. You know, something that's helping American people is the Democratic thing. After Obama went in with Obamacare, even though it continues to get pushed as this thing that's destroyed American families and people don't get healthcare anymore, that needs to be what you're hanging your hat on, because that's what people care about across all party lines. Because guess who gets sick? Everybody. Mm-hmm. So number one, healthcare law.
They have increased the number of Dems in the House that support Medicare for All. Not as much in some cases as we would like. Like Emma was talking about, you know, Kara Eastman and James Thompson and a number of others. But it has expanded. It's becoming more popular both inside of the caucus and, you know, nationally.
Yeah. And make people, again, like you said, you know many things won't get passed, but people have to be on record. Next, money in politics. Again, another thing that sweeps across, I think, all political lines, and it's a very progressive thing. Put it out there, make the case, and tell people why that's what we need to do. Mm. And say, don't you want, I thought President Trump was cleaning the swamp. He's emptying the swamp. You know what the swamp is? The swamp is money in politics. It's paying people. And actually, again, say there's corrupt Democrats that get paid by corporations to do their bidding. Mm-hmm. Don't you hate that?
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, let's end it.
Yeah, and I would say take a page. This is to the Democratic leadership, and if it is Nancy Pelosi, I guess it's to her. take a page out of the ballot measures that passed all over the country.
Yeah.
People were, they were voting for environmental issues, anti-corruption issues, things to allow people to vote, you know, voter same-day registration, automatic registration, independent redistricting commissions, all these things, anti-corruption measures. That is what people want.
Totally.
Maybe do that nationally too. That would be pretty cool, especially since you can do it anytime you want now.
More minimum wage increase. All mm-hmm. these types of things. That
marijuana
that,
legalization.
Yeah. Look, what Michigan was the state that went last night?
Yeah. Well, several did. Yeah. And you know, re-enfranchising voters of felons yeah. in Florida as well.
Yeah.
There were a lot of things like this. You could totally do that.
If you have nothing to lose, you have nothing to lose, right?
Yeah. And to sum up how I feel about this, Jonathan Larson of TYT had tweeted, imagine if House Democrats focused on passing one popular populist measure after another on healthcare, education, Wall Street, Social Security, Medicaid, Medicare, student loans, you name it, for the next 2 years only to die at the hands of
Absolutely.
Mitch McConnell and Donald Trump. Don't wait until 2 months before the 2020 election to figure out what's going to be in your commercials. Create the content for those commercials today
yes.
by making them vote down incredibly popular and growing in popularity measures in all of these different areas.
Because you know what suddenly is happening? They're also getting asked, how are you going to compromise with Trump now that you're in power? You start saying, I got a damn mandate mm-hmm. from people that I represent to do what they want. And I start asking Trump, how is he going to compromise my yeah. way? Only thing he's saying is infrastructure, which no one understands what it means, and neither does he.
Yeah, and one additional thing. So, you know, the investigation's obviously more important, the legislation. And third, stop the damage. We are the damage report. I would love to have less damage to report on a daily basis. So when they try to pass more tax cuts, when they try to destroy Social Security, all of those things, you need to be the bulwark that stops it from happening. And if you compromise with them, you will have proven us right in saying that you shouldn't be in the leadership, and we will have even more cause to primary more and more of you the next time
around.
What
will you change the name of the show to if there's no more damage? The rebuilt, repaired report?
I have no idea, but I look forward to that issue. Okay, we do have to take another break. When we come back, the nation's Zoe Carpenter is going to be joining us, breaking down more of the returns from the election, both in terms of the candidates and the ballot measures after this. Now on the Damage Report, the nation's associate Washington editor is Zoe Carpenter. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Good to have you here. So I want to start off, we're going to talk obviously about the midterms. How did your expectations going into yesterday's elections compare to the reality that played out?
Well, I think the reality that played out was pretty consistent with the polling we had. So I won't deny that I was hoping for upsets in places like Texas and Florida. But I think really the results there were pretty astounding considering how stacked the landscape was against those Democratic candidates and the historic nature of the campaigns that they were running. They were trying to do something very difficult. And so in the House, I think that also corresponded pretty generally to what the polling suggested. So no huge surprises for me.
So and no standout races that really went not the way you expected?
Oh, well, okay, Wisconsin and Kansas. I think the governor's races in those states were very surprising to me. The fact that we have a Democratic woman winning in Kansas, I think is, that's great. And that was not a race that I was expecting to turn out that direction.
So, Iza, this is JR.
Hey.
So with a mix of I guess people are seeing it as a mixed results last night, except for the president. So when you have results that are surprising, like you said, in Wisconsin and Kansas, but then things that are also surprising the other way, like Florida and the Senate race in Texas, not necessarily surprising, but I guess disappointing is a better word. What is it that each of these candidates that did win that were surprising, at least for the Democratic side, versus the ones that didn't win that were disappointing for the Democratic side? Is it just simply the regions they're in, or is this something that's across the board a go-to that can that's kind of a winner for Democrats, in your opinion?
You know, I think it's pretty varied across the landscape. I think definitely the idiosyncrasies of each state matters. I think in a place like Georgia, voter suppression matters. I think race may have definitely been a factor in Florida. And, you know, in places like Texas, I think although we think of Cruz as being unpopular, he is also a very adept politician. And, you know, he came in second in the 2016 primary. It's a real mixed result when you look at somebody like Sherrod Brown holding his Senate seat by a very comfortable 6-point margin. He's very progressive and runs against Wall Street, for example. So I don't think we can take any lessons about someone like Beto being too progressive, say. I think the truth here is that the Republicans have a base that is very active and very entrenched, and high turnout doesn't necessarily benefit the Democrats in the way that I think we've been told.
Yeah. So I know that in the day before the election, you wrote an article for The Nation talking about a number of women who were running, attempting to flip red districts. In general, how did that end up working out?
Well, I think we did see a historic number of women candidates make it into office in the House. The three races I was focused on were in Washington State. And because it's a mail-in state, they haven't actually finalized the results in two of those three races. So Kim Schreier, who's a pediatrician running for a district that spans the eastern part of Seattle and some rural areas east of Seattle, it looks like she's up at this point, the last time I checked today. Down further south in Washington, in the southwest part of the state, Carolyn Long is still locked in a tight race with the incumbent Jamie Herrera Butler. Mm-hmm. So both of those races are still too close to call. But I think what you did see in them were these strong female candidates that were supported by the kind of grassroots uprising that we've seen since the 26th election, yeah, which in many cases was led by women also.
So we were talking earlier in the show about the success of female candidates and, you know, a great number one representation going up in the Senate and the House, although still women are wildly underrepresented in both of those. And so the thing is, at the same time, you had all of these candidates, these new women running. Most of them were running as Democrats. I noticed that in cases like Brian Kemp's race, I think 76% of white women ended up voting for him. So it really seems like we're sort of moving in two directions here, where a lot of women still identify as Republicans, but Republicans aren't putting up female candidates anywhere near the numbers that the Democrats are. If there is going to be more representation in future races, is it going to come almost wholly on the back of the Democrats, or is there a path for the Republicans to start to represent women a little bit more?
I think just because Republicans are putting forward female candidates doesn't mean that they'll necessarily be representing women writ large. You know, someone like Marsha Blackburn was successful in Tennessee last night. I would argue that her policy positions do not represent women well in terms of being anti-choice and things of that nature, anti-healthcare. So I think you'll still see candidates like Marsha Blackburn running on the Republican ticket. But I think that in terms of women who are proudly pro-women and who are taking a stand against sexual assault and standing up for healthcare and things like that, I think that's still definitely going to come from the Democratic side.
So I know that you write quite a bit about health and the environment, and across the country we had a great number of ballot measures having to do with those two different areas. Overall, I know some still haven't been called yet, but how would you say ballot initiatives in those areas ended up turning out?
It turned out great in terms of Medicaid expansion. Red states, Nebraska, Utah, and Idaho all expanded Medicaid with pretty resounding margins. That's not too surprising to me. That's such a common sense issue. And I think, you know, in the previous segment, you were talking about Democrats needing to put forward legislation, positive legislation, in the next 2 years. I think healthcare is going to continue to be an area that is broadly popular because there are still huge coverage gaps. We did see one Medicaid expansion initiative fail in Montana, likely due to the $17 million that Big Tobacco threw against it, attacking it as an unreasonable tax increase. That's going to create a huge problem because nearly 100,000 people will lose their health insurance next year if the legislature doesn't step in and fix it.
Wow. Well, Zoe Carpenter, thank you for joining us on the Damage Report. Great to get your perspective.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. We are going to take one more short break, come back. We're going to talk a little bit more about our takeaways from the election. But also, I've noticed that one story that's been huge over the past week or two suddenly has disappeared. We'll tell you which one that is after this. Okay, so we've only got a couple minutes left. So I want to address a couple of points. So can we just bring up a lower third down here? I just want to make something very clear to the audience because I know there's some concern. If you see, we have the countdown 726 days. We're kidding. We're not actually going to do it for 726 days.
We're just kidding. It's actually 725 days.
Exactly. We're off. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I kind of want to because I want people to, you know, keep their eyes on the prize and everything. But we're not actually going to do it for 726 days. But we do like to keep you focused on something. There, it's very hard to do this.
Yeah.
So we will continue to promote, you know, different like groups and things like that in that little bar there. That said, let's turn to the news. Or what's not in the news, actually. So what the media seems to be missing is that goddamn caravan. They have developed some sort of cloaking technology. That's the only reason I can think of why suddenly they're not in the news anymore. They've literally vanished from view. Perhaps they have one of those cloaks from the Harry Potter verse.
I think the problem is that they're a few hundred miles away. And maybe it's not a big deal.
It's weird. It's almost as if it was never actually a big deal. But Donald Trump doesn't care. I saw a big headline. Fox and Friends has like moved on. They don't care anymore. And remember, they are to blame more than perhaps anyone else on pushing that as a national story. And suddenly it's not a big deal. The Pentagon has announced that Operation Faithful Patriot, which that's just some delicious Orwellian language there, it's being changed. Its name's going away. Soon, perhaps the troops will go away. It's weird.
It's really weird how that works, man. And you know what? Especially considering that this whole caravan thing was a plot by Democrats to have all these folks come up right before the election. Again, even when it was this big story, what benefit would the Democrats get from paying George or asking George Soros to give another few billion dollars to a bunch of Central American migrants to come up? Because that would help the election out. You know what the answer would have been? You know what's insinuated in that assumption or that conspiracy theory is that they're coming up to vote. That was like they're trying to get these guys, these criminals up here to vote, maybe kill a couple white folks that they can't vote. What did that have to do with the election? If anything, the conservative approach had to do with the election. They could scare you into voting against Democrats or for them. That was actually the only motivation from either one of these parties to do something like this.
Oh my God, I'm seeing our lower third Fox News coverage of the caravan has disappeared. Perhaps it was stolen by the caravan, those criminals. Dastardly criminals. That's probably not actually what was going on. I mean, look, there was a narrative that could have played out about the new threat that is going on in this country, and it has to do with pipe bombs in the mail, I would say, rather than a caravan of migrants. I will say this. There's some socialist like online magazines that I read articles in, and I read one, and it was why we shouldn't just welcome undocumented immigrants in, but we should allow them to vote. Which obviously every like Chris Kobach's head just exploded and took out half of the state with him. But I was reading it, and I have to say the arguments that were made were pretty good, actually. It might be a bridge too far for America, but
give me one of them. Do you remember any of
them? It was talking about all of the ways, and we talk about this from time to time, all of the ways that completely undocumented immigrants still contribute in terms of taxes and in all of these other ways. And compared that to all of the reasons that people have any democratic rights at all. And if we do, if we have some sort of inherent like right to representation, it looks like they earned the vast majority of that. And it's something like, is there a debate in this country right now about giving them the vote? There is not. Maybe there's a made up one that Donald Trump says, but it's not actually going on.
Yeah, nobody's talking about that. Well,
maybe we should start to talk about it. Let's shift the argument a little bit. We'll see. Anyway,
another
that's just interesting.
The House can start to initiate during
probably
this
not.
Season. That's probably one I don't think will happen.
I don't think it's going to happen. We only have a couple minutes left. And so although I did say that 1 million days, that's funny, guys. We're still a long way off. But remember, the election cycle in America is you get 2 weeks off after an election and then immediately you're in the thick of it again. And in just a couple of weeks, Bernie Sanders' big book, Where We Go From Here, is going to come out on the 27th. It is likely people are going to start declaring soon. So as much as we may not want to be involved in that, if you were a prospective Democratic candidate for 2020, we've just had these midterms. What do you do now to prove yourself? If you're one of these randos, you know, if you're Cory Booker, if you're Hickenlooper, or any of these, as much as we might be frustrated with some of them, what can they do that would make you interested?
Again, you got to. It's almost not easy, but it's easier, especially if the Democratic Party doesn't go that progressive. You become the name that gets talked about. Look, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. She came out as this crazy wingnut socialist Democratic, you know, candidate, right? And they kept talking about her. They kept talking about her because how much they hated her. You want to be the one that pops out and they go, this one is so much more crazier than the rest of the Democratic Party because you're saying things that people actually want to see and hear get done. And no matter what it seems like the negative coverage is, it's good because your name is out there. And it's actually for a good reason, not because you're caught up in some kind of scandal or because, I don't know, you got into a Twitter fight or something. You know, it's actually for a good reason. And you still actually you get some recognition for the right things.
Yeah, and especially, so obviously you were talking from the point of view of a pundit on Fox News, crazy out of control. But like when we saw when Sean Hannity was describing her platform,
Exactly.
Okay, that scares some of the Fox viewers, but the vast majority of regular, reasonable people see that and think, oh, that actually sounds pretty good. I would love to have a number of different people out there fighting over each other to push that case for the next 2 years. Hopefully we'll see that. Anyway, thank you, JR, for joining us. Always good to have JR Wednesdays.
Sure.
Thank you for watching, everybody. TYT.com/John to become a member and rate the podcast. We'll see you tomorrow. Thank you for listening to the Damage Report podcast, the show covering the true threats facing our country and what you can actually do about them. You can support this free podcast by leaving us a review and giving us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you happen to be listening to it. Every review helps more people discover the show at no cost to you. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.